At Bright Ideas Brewing in North Adams, Massachusetts, the grand opening fest is Sunday, June 19th from 2 to 7 with live music, street food, and if you're going to be at a brewery, hey, you might as well have beer. So whose bright idea was this?
The initial part of it was I was approached a while back about doing a philanthropic venture for the city of North Adams, which was going to be at a space about 600, 700 feet from here. Got interested in that project. That never really came to fruition. And yet the bug had sort of been lit for me to do a brewery. And right about that time, Eric came in, and we became co-founders in this project, and we approached Mass Mocha about doing it on site here.
Joe took a lot of convincing.
So what are the advantages of having it here on campus?
Well, Mass Mocha aspires to be a honky-tonk at the end of the day. We talk art and play that game, but really it's about dancing, music, and drinking beer. So this really pushed our mission forward in a real radical step. It was great.
But the audiences are similar, right?
There's a lot of crossover, and we're really glad to have it. If Bright Ideas is here, Tunnel City Coffee just opened up across the place. In general, people are spending more time at Mass Mocha and in the Northern Berkshires altogether, and having a great place to eat and drink and hang out is right down the center of our mission. I was not being all that facetious.
The Venn diagram between music fans and contemporary art fans and craft beer fans is practically a circle. There's very few outside that, I would say.
So in the creation of the place, which we'll talk about the beer in a second, but in the creation of the place, with that in mind, what did you want to include?
The main focus here was to include a community gathering space, a space where everybody was comfortable coming in, space that bridged visitors to Mass Mocha, bridged the residents of the city of North Adams, bridged our friends, our family, and sort of a melting pot where everybody could come in here and enjoy a uniform adventure in beer, but sit here, have fun, talk to each other, and as somebody described later, a coffee shop type of mentality to a brewery.
Describe to me in your mind the perfect universal adventure of beer.
Beer's the most egalitarian product, right? I mean, other than bread, probably. Beer is universal. But I think that also because there's been a manufacturing history here, that making something in North Adams that is a North Adams product and is we're the North Adams hometown beer. And that's part of the adventure, is again taking something that's where you can walk in, drink a beer at this bar, and look 10 feet away and see where it's made. There's very few things that you have an opportunity, there's very few products that we consume in this day and age that you have the opportunity to do that.
What allows you, talk about the mechanism statewide that allows you to operate in the manner of which you operate?
There's a relatively new license in Massachusetts called the Farm Brewery License, which gives you some huge advantages. It gives you the ability to self-distribute your beer. So in other words, we don't have to hire a distributor. If I wanted to sell beer to a bar in Boston, I could throw it in the back of my truck, I could drive it to Boston, and I could sell it directly to a bar there for retail prices. I can do the same with Mass Mocha. If Mass Mocha has a concert, we can brew a beer for that concert, and we can roll it across the parking lot and self-distribute it to Mass Mocha. That's a huge advantage, you know, for a brewery. The other thing that law requires, which in our case is actually great, is it requires you to only serve in the tap room that which you make in the four walls of the building in which the tap room exists. So I can't bring, you know, another company's beer in here and sell it. I can't bring wine in here. We can't bring spirits in here. We can bring root beer in here. But in terms of alcoholic beverages, we have to produce it on site, whatever we want to serve. And that's great because that's going back to what Eric says, that's what allows us to say everything you're drinking right here was made right there. And that's part of this community experience and the wonder of this building in this room.
How have you done? I know, Orion, early on you were talking about trying to source as much of the malt and hops and things like that here locally. How's that going? I haven't gotten an update on that.
It's hard in Massachusetts.
We had spectacular good luck locally sourcing our water. This is North Adams tap water, ladies and gentlemen.
It's great water. But you know, there are a couple places in Massachusetts that are experimenting with growing beer-making quality barley. There's a place that roasts barley. There are little islands of hop production.
Oh, really?
But overall, if all the breweries in Massachusetts tried to source their stuff from Massachusetts, there would not be enough to go around. But we've done some local collaborations. There's a hop farm in Pownall, which, you know, as far as distance goes, is 10 miles away, that we've basically bought the production of them, of their entire output for the next decade. And Chris is dry hopping a lot of our beers with their hops. So the flavor and aroma that you get at the end of our IPA comes from the hop farm in Pownall.
So we talked about the place. So let's talk about the beer. The first thing that I noticed upon walking in here was that, and I love you for this, is that the names are, it's like our book show. Is that it is what it is. So ale is ale, brown is brown, goza is goza, IPA is IPA. You didn't have to be creative at all.
You're asking a lot of people, I think, to remember a big, long beer name. And there's so many things out in the marketplace now, and we just want to provide people just a familiar face, as it were, when they walk in and they can see the tap handle and they say, oh, I know what that is. And it's going to be creatively done, but they have a feeling of recognition, at least. And I think also that we've talked, you know, Chris, we've talked a lot about seasonality with these beers, and that the IPA, there's going to be an IPA on there, but the IPA that we're drinking today and the IPA that we drink in October may evolve.
What I wanted to do with the beers, when I was really trying to put together the range of beers that we do here, I was very mindful of the fact that we're in an art facility here, and I wanted all the beers to be kind of primary and to be quintessential, to, you know, for the IPA to be straight down the line as an IPA. And then obviously with the red and the brown, I mean, we're really just trying to focus on the absolute essence of what makes that beer style that beer style. And you just don't need a funny name for that. We're just really trying to concentrate on the essence.
Which is different than the idea of it being generic.
It is. I think it is, yes. I mean, I think that what we are trying to produce beers with primary colors, we are trying to also hew to the fact that we're called Bright Ideas, and therefore all of our beers are, I mean, apart from the Imperial Stout, which you could not see through at any point, but all the beers are bright and clear. And I think that when you go out into the marketplace and there are so many now mashups of different styles, that in fact maybe perhaps being a little bit true to style or essence is actually becoming rarer and rarer in the beer marketplace right now.
It appears that everybody's looking for some free room to run in making beer, and it's left a big hole right up the middle, to use a football analogy, but it has. Chris put perfectly these pure forms. Drinkability, quaffability is the term we like to use a lot. Having a beer shouldn't be homework. It should be something you can enjoy and come and sit with your friends and talk and rail against the world or commiserate or celebrate and not be feeling like you're being tested. And so being able to sit down and enjoy it and another one, and there's going to be another one the next day, that's really where we're aiming.
So I ask this question to most, we tend to do a lot of interviews with breweries, which I'm very proud of, Joe. I am very proud of that. But one of the questions I like to ask is, of course, what beer do you find to be most popular with customers, but also what you believe, and this is for you, Chris, of what I have found is most brewers will say, these are all good beers. I'm proud of all of these beers, but this is the one that's really.
You should drink this.
This one's a really, really, really good one.
It is a difficult question for a brewer. I mean, that is, it's a little bit like asking someone, you know, which is your favorite child. I think probably it's easy to be proud of the beer you like the best, you know, and the IPA is generally the one that I would take home. But I think in terms of a beer that just knocks me over every time I have it in the right way is the brown.
Yes.
And I love our brown ale, which has the least kind of assuming name of any of the beers in our plainly named lineup. A good brown ale. And what this one is, it just tastes so much darker and more roasty than it actually looks. I mean, it looks like a nice amber colored beer, but it's got these really gorgeous, tasty overtones to it. And I use brown malt, which is something that brewers basically stopped using in the 19th century. And there are still only a very few maltsters, mainly in the UK, producing brown malt. Basically, brewers found that you could color a beer by making it with pale malt and throwing in a small handful of very dark grains. But what we do is produce this one with brown malt, and you get the same color, but way more intensity of flavor. And I just, again, that just goes with it being the quintessential brown.
This is a beautiful smokiness to it. It's really very, very nice. And is not as, perhaps as cozy as many browns are.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose brown has that kind of homespun kind of character to it. The most popular brown ale in the world is the one that everyone's heard of is Newcastle Brown Ale, which, of course, is no longer made in Newcastle, not even in Sunderland, where it used to be made. And is
Newark,
just
it's an
absolutely lousy beer.
Newark Brown Ale.
I mean, it's a terrible, terrible beer. So, you know, there's just so much space to make a good brown ale out there. And even the American browns that we used to see a lot of over the years, some of those have disappeared. Do you remember Pete's Wicked Brown?
Yeah.
That was a great beer. That was one of my first favorite American craft brews and really kind of started me on this adventure.
Tell me about the ESB.
So that's extra special bitter ESB. It's terribly tough to sell something with bitter in the title. And it's such an incredibly drinkable, quaffable beer. I mean, it's the basic English pub beer. And again, really tried to almost caricature it to a certain extent. Used a British ale malt called Maris Otter, which has a gorgeous biscuity, malty taste to it. And Fuggles hops, which are just a, you know, earthy, spicy, again, the quintessentially English hop. So there's nothing complex about it. It's trying to be exactly what it is, an English pub ale.
And what's interesting about the ESB is, so you get the people coming in saying, what's your lightest thing? You get the mass-produced beer folks coming in, and you try to give them the wheat. And actually, because of the lemongrass and the blood orange, that's a little too complicated. And they, no, this is too fruity. This is too and then you try to give them the ale, and it's a little too hoppy. And you give them the ESB, which they never would have gone for based on the name. But you give them the ESB, and they're like, that's it. And we're sitting here thinking this is your quintessential English pub ale, and it's
America
replacing.
America is poised for an ESB renaissance.
Yes.
I think the one Joe has been drinking is the one that you pulled from the cask, though,
yes.
Right? You have two versions of ESB. Am I right in that?
You're right.
So the one I'm drinking is warmer than the others. Is that by design?
That is. Mm-hmm. That's room temperature, although Chris defines room as 55.
It's cellar temperature.
Cellar temperature.
It's being served off a real English hand pump, one of only two in the county. So it's basically pulled out of a cask by the strength of the bartender's arm. There's no gas pushing it through. It's served at cellar temperature, which is between 55 and 58 degrees, and the only carbonation in there is what's naturally arisen through fermentation. So it's just the authentic way that you would serve this beer in an English pub. Even though looking around, this really doesn't look like an English pub in here, but you can close your eyes and pretty much be there.
One of the guys who really helped us build this space, Richard Criddle, who's the chief fabricator at Mass Mocha, who's British, came in and tried that for the first time at cask drawn, and actually got tearful, and told us stories about
Mama used to make.
Like Mama used to make. and actually told these stories about when he was a kid growing up in Britain, and he would actually, you know, they would drive the taps into the casks of ESB and set them up on the tavern's racks and serve them by gravity.
So Richard's 300 years old.
So Chris is the only person in this room without an accent. What is it about the without the fact that we in this country we like our beer, or we tend to like our beer colder? What as a brewer, how do you see that temperature?
You know, English pub beers are of a lower strength and ingredient content, frankly, than most American craft beers. I mean, most American craft beers start in the mid fives, 5%, 5.5% ABV, and go on up into, you know, into double digits in some cases. And when you're serving a beer colder, and it's a bit like the difference between red and white wine, you have a white wine cold, and a lot of those flavors, the more delicate flavors come out when it's cold, but the bigger, bolder, fruitier flavors don't. Now, when you've got a beer like an English pub ale that is pretty understated, if you were to serve that cold, it would be the death of that beer. It really doesn't work for it. Whereas with a bigger beer and the zesty kind of hoppiness that you get from IPAs and American pale ales and so on, frankly, I think that they work incredibly well cold and with carbonation. I'm no purist about that. It's not like I'm a card-carrying member of the Campaign for Real Ale. I think there is some really, really great beer being made here, and a lot of it happens to be cold.
With that said, the ESB still has a 5.8. I mean, that it is deceptively strong.
It's certainly stronger than we would be able to get, than I would be able to get away with brewing in England. That would be considered that's at the high end of the range for a strong English ale. But we are serving it both carbonated and as a cask beer, so it does have to be able to stand up for itself when we're serving it cold from the taps.
So meanwhile, the strongest beer is the stout 8.2. Talk a little bit about that, a silky beer, safe to say.
Well, that's the oats in it. Generally, if you have oats in a stout, it does add that kind of that mouthfeel, which is classically described as silky. One of the things about brewing on a smaller system here, I mean, we brew 7 barrels a time, which is 217 gallons. And yet, you know, our sacks of grain come in 50 or 55 pound bags. And It's just a royal pain kind of splitting the bags into two. So we found ourselves kind of adding large quantities proportionally of the darker grains to the Imperial Stout. So that this is, I suppose, according to the kind of classical style guidelines, this is way darker and way more roasty even than Imperial Stout is meant to be. Well, I don't mind that, because again, we're trying to do, as it were, the quintessential or the absolute form of this particular beer.
By the way, at what point in your career did you get away completely from the metric system?
I'll tell you when I do.
We use 50-liter kegs to this day.
We use 50-liter kegs, and when I'm working out how much yeast I'm pitching into a particular beer, it's an awful lot easier to work in liters and in powers of 10 than it is to work in gallons.
I would think so. So let me ask this question. I'll ask Joe first. As far as how you see this in the overall plan of mass mocha taking over the world, how does this fit in, and what is the how does this fit into the long-range plan of what you have envisioned for this complex?
We've got a lot cooking right now. The opening of Bright Ideas in a couple of days. It feels to me like it's been open for a month or two, because people have been coming in here in big numbers on Thursday through Saturday. But we have a lot of construction going on, and we're about to double the size of the museum, adding stages, galleries. another 130,000 square feet of exhibitions. And part of the plan is to have more things to keep people here longer and longer. I mean, we take seriously the economic development part of our mission. And if you're in the business of attracting and keeping people here, having more to see, more to do, and more to drink, I'll further that. It's beginning to happen. I think that, you know, the 9 years ago, 10 years ago, before the Clark's beautiful Tadeo Ando expansion and before we had added Solowit and Anselm Kiefer, people would zip up from Lenox or Lee or come down from Manchester or up from northwestern Connecticut and visit the Clark and zip through Massmoca and maybe catch a play at the Williamstown Theater Festival and then hightail it back to wherever they were from. That's getting hard to do. And places like this that make the whole experience of spending time in this neck of the woods will lead to more restaurants, more hotels, more things to see and do, longer street time for our visitors. And all that's important. It helps drive the economy. So I think this is not a frilly thing on the edge for us. This is right down the center. Although I must say, when I see people get out of their car and walk across the parking lot and come into the front door of Bright Ideas Brewery and then get back in their car and leave without taking a right turn into the museum under the clock tower, my heart bleeds just a little. I think, whoa, come here, come on back. Seeing this, there's a whole parallel universe here that's in play. It's really interesting.
And I would think, for the two of you, is there still a sociological experiment at work here that you're fascinated to see what happens over time?
It's evolving because, you know, so far, I mean, Massmoca has not hit its, you know, peak summer stride yet by any means. And so we've been busy. I mean, we're hitting our targets despite the fact we're not fully open. And I'd say right now our volume is 70% the city of North Adams and the surrounding communities. Probably 20% visitors to Massmoca who are coming by on their way out of the museum, and about 10% beer destination people who are coming here because they know there's a brewery. That's going to evolve in you know, throughout June, and we expect something different in July, something different in August, and then we're, you know, really curious what the foliage season, you know, will look like. So we aren't through a year cycle here, and we're expecting, you know, tremendously different things each month. And that's the social experiment, which so far has been going really well.
And fortunately, drinking beer is a four-season activity. Not weather dependent. Rain or shine, we're here for you. The other part of designing these beers is that they're designed to be drunk in this room. And the room is designed for the drinking of these beers. And while we will be doing some limited distribution out into the world, and people should feel free to take our beers home and enjoy them, the act of drinking a Bright Ideas beer is partially about being in this place, and partially about talking to us, and listening to the music that we play, and experiencing your time here in this historic building. And so I think that that's, seeing how people have been responding to that very specific thing, there was an incredible piece in the Berkshire Eagle that the writer talked about, like being something that's familiar and surprising simultaneously. And that's like right bullseye. That's exactly what we want.
Thank you very much.
Thank you
for being here and for inviting us in. Best of luck on the opening. The Grand Opening Fest is Sunday. It is the 19th of June from 2 to 7, and there will be live music and street food and, of course, the beer before us. Gentlemen, congratulations. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for coming over.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.